Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Today I want to show you some things that I thought I'd lost. I just want to show you some pictures that I thought I'd actually lost, and I found it, and it's just part of tons of stuff that I have, that I've accumulated over the years, and it's an interesting little story. Because it will show you some things about how things actually work in Africa. Instead of listening to liberals, Jews, and lying blacks, you can find out how things actually worked in Africa, and I'll show you how it actually was. So this map merely shows you how Africa was cut up by European powers. The whites basically came and took over all of Africa, and different nations grabbed different chunks for themselves. This is in the time before World War I. But I want to show you some things about South Africa that you don't know. And this is going to be personal stuff, so you're going to see pictures that I took. And I want to show you just a little bit of how Africa actually works, how life really is here, and the role of the whites, the role of the whites that is never acknowledged. The whites are actually the only people who made this stupid continent actually function. There's nothing wrong with the continent. The problem is the blacks who live on it. Everything else on the continent's absolutely fine. So first I want to show you these photos, because there's a little secret hidden away here. This will give you an idea of where I worked in my final years in the bank. This is a contact center of a large bank in South Africa. And you see those windows up there, and those people sitting by the computers up there. That's the computer department for a telephone contact center. And this is where I worked for about 8 years before they drove me out. But I just want to show you. And here you can see this contact center has about 1,000 people in it. Most of them are black, but there are whites among them. And this is a big contact center for the bank. You've got a couple of banks in South Africa, and they all have contact centers like this. And these things are set up with computers and phones and everything. Tons and tons of money. Tons and tons of money is handled by this place. And this bank is rich up to its eyeballs. And so you can see just what it looked like. And there, right in the middle, is a special sort of place that you can go up and you can go and sit in the middle there. They've got coffee and stuff there. So this is where I worked for the last couple of years of my working career. But now I want to show you a special little picture that I took. And this is also inside the bank. And I took this photo just so that I can show people some of the strange things that exist. Things that exist that you won't see in the mass media, you'll never hear a liberal talk about it, etc. The bank that I worked for owned a couple of buildings in the center of Johannesburg. And of course, with crime and all that sort of stuff, bank staff had to move between these buildings. And there were thousands of people in these buildings. And what the bank did was they went and they built a tunnel system. And this tunnel system exists underneath these buildings, goes underneath roads and things. You drive into a car park in one place, and if you know where the tunnel system is, you walk into the tunnel system, and off you go. And it's quite convoluted, and it's not quite level, because this wasn't originally intended to take place. But they've quietly built these tunnel systems so that the bank staff can walk around underground and move from building to building, and they're totally safe and all that sort of thing. So there you can see I've cleared out the name of the place, and I've just left the tunnel part there. And this is the entrance to the tunnel from a car park, from one of the car parks. And this tunnel system, as far as I know, joined at least about 5 different buildings. So that is how the rich do things. The rich in Africa have got all kinds of things that you don't know about. They even have got a very special VIP section of the airport where they come and go. They don't go with the normal people. When you've got money, you can do anything. You can go anywhere, do anything, overcome any rule. That is how it actually works. So this is just to show you the tunnel system. They won't tell you that there are tunnels underneath the buildings, but this is just what one particular company did. I'm sure there are many other such systems, but it'll give you an idea of how when you've got money and all that sort of stuff, you don't worry too much about what the blacks are up to in the streets and things. You do what you need to do. They've got stacks of money. Nobody even knows, other than the bank staff, some of these things that exist. Now I want to show you another aspect of Africa, and this is the role that whites play. As always, you are never really told what the whites do in Africa, and I'm going to explain these pictures to you shortly. The whites who come to Africa, Africa's got something of what you could call a Wild West feel to it. Africa is sort of a place where whites look and they say, here's a clean slate, we can do something here. And a lot of the whites who live in Africa actually have got a sort of a pioneering attitude. And they quite like the fact that there are certain kinds of freedoms, and that this place is a place where you can do things. And in the days of white rule, whites used to just go crazy. They used to do all kinds of things all the time, and they couldn't stop coming up with ideas. They were so full of ideas, they just didn't have enough hands and money to do all the things that they wanted to do. And what I want to explain to you here in the rest of this video is I want to show you a little bit about things that whites do for these useless blacks, ungrates, bunch of ingrates, unhappy people, permanently unhappy, always blaming the white man, thanks to what communists, Jews, and others put into their heads. And they only blame the white man for all their problems. However, the truth of Africa is that the white man isn't the problem. The white man is actually the problem solver. And the white man comes up with one idea on top of another. And that is how most of Africa was built, by whites. You had a few thousand whites here and a few tens of thousands of whites there. And the next thing you saw is that all kinds of things were being invented. Whites were doing all sorts of things. They were doing things that had never been done before on the African continent. They were building things. They were farming. They were doing all kinds of engineering projects. And everything started to work. They started to actually build infrastructure for this continent so that this continent could become something. And then along came the communists and the Jews, and they told the blacks, well, these whites are stealing from you. You must steal everything from them. And that's now where we are today. But I want to show you these pictures because this is the story about a white Englishman that I met here in South Africa. These photos that you're about to see here, like this one on the screen here, these were all taken in March of 2010. After my mother had died, and I was living alone, I became concerned by the possibility when I'm at work that blacks could break into my house and steal my computers. And I didn't mind if they stole other things, I was just most concerned about them stealing my computers. So I came up with an idea where I thought to myself that despite having an alarm system and bars and iron doors and things, in the event that somehow blacks should be able to get into my house, I thought maybe I should take my computers and put them in a server cabinet. And I didn't have a server cabinet, and I decided, let me get somebody to make a cabinet that's quite strong for me. And that's the thing that you see there, is this old guy has been working, this old white guy has been working on a server cabinet for me, and it's still incomplete at the time of this photo. And I'm going to put my PCs inside there, and I'm going to lock it, and then I've got wires and the screen and stuff outside. So my thinking was that because blacks break into your house and they run after the electronic stuff first, especially computers, I thought, let me get something that is quite tough. And believe me, that thing is very tough, actually. And let me get something that is tough. I put my computers inside. Once they're inside the house and they're hunting for the computers, they'll find that maybe they can grab the keyboard and the screen, but the actual computers are sitting inside that thing, and to now break that thing open on limited time, it's going to be difficult for them. And hopefully by then, with the alarm having gone off and the armed response and myself, etc., you know, we might be able to get here before they get away with other stuff. So that was the thinking behind the server cabinet. So once I conceived of the idea of the server cabinet, I then needed to find a guy who was going to build it. And I did some hunting around, and then eventually somebody said to me, well, they've got a friend who's out on the western, far western side of Johannesburg, almost outside Johannesburg, and he's got a workshop, and he does engineering jobs like this. So I spoke to the guy, gave him the parameters, and this is what he was busy building. And then one day, while he was busy with it, I arranged to come and see him. And it had been, while I'd been talking to him, he'd been telling me about something else that he was doing. And I decided, I really got to go and visit this guy. So here I am in his workshop, and he's actually there by the window. And this is just the server cabinet. But he told me about something else that he'd come up with. So this old guy had a couple of blacks working for him. But other than that, this old Englishman born here in Johannesburg, he was happy as hell when he's working with mechanical stuff, electrical stuff, even computer stuff. And I knew him for about the last six or seven years of his life until he passed away. And these were the photos that I thought I'd actually lost. So these are photos of all kinds of machines that he had in his workshop at the time. And he was very creative. He would say to me, you know, you see that machine over there? I went and modified this and I did that to it and so on. He was alive and awake and always thinking of new things. He was a true white man. As a white man, he's thinking, he's working, he's got tons of ideas, and he's never short of ideas. He was actually very active, and I enjoyed his company and visited him several times at his house in town after he got rid of this workshop that you see here. But here you can see all the different machines and things that he's got that do steel work, etc. And then he'd say to me, I think even like this thing that you see in front of you, then he'd say to me, you see, I took this thing and I modified this and I changed that. He even was fiddling with modifying his own machines. But very fascinating old bloke, and I really enjoyed talking to him. And he then told me that he had an idea. And he told me that he'd had an idea to build houses for the blacks. He had an idea to build houses for the blacks that were extremely cheap to make. And he and a partner even went and they tried to propose this to the black government of South Africa in the late 1990s. He told me he had a simple system, he'd worked it all out, he could build a building, and he'd actually built one as a sample. And he said to me the blacks were not interested one bit in his ideas. And he told me all the benefits and how quick and easy this was to do, etc., etc. So that's what I came to see. And it was while I was there at his workshop that he then showed me the stuff. And so this is the house that's attached to the workshop. This is his house, and you can see it's a double story. There aren't that many in South Africa. And so I quite liked his little double story house. And this was quite sort of out of Johannesburg, quite far away out of Johannesburg. And this is the view from the top, from the top. Anyway, and he happens to have a yacht. His son was into yachting, and his son had some problem with the yacht, and they'd actually hauled the yacht up all the way from the harbor here, right in the middle of South Africa. It's well over 1,000 kilometers away from the sea, and so he still had the yacht here. And you can see there's the yacht in the yard. And that little white car that you see over there, the little white car that you see over there, that's my car. That's my very, very old car, and I've still got it. And it still runs. And here you can see more of the yacht. I was quite impressed by this because this was quite a big thing. And he'd had to keep it here for years. I was quite impressed by this yacht attached to the house. Anyway, he told me that he'd come up with an idea, and by the way, he's not the first to come up with ideas for doing things for these black ingrates, ungrateful scum, complaining, useless people. We whites of Africa, we took these blacks who otherwise were on their way to dying. They weren't a healthy people, and over time they became our servants and they started working for us. And we found lots of uses for them and we made them useful for our benefit. They were like our cheap labor. You could almost call them our slaves, not quite, but they were our cheap labor in the same way that the Romans and the Greeks had their cheap labor. We had our cheap labor, but our cheap labor rebelled against us, and that's a bit of a problem there. So they aren't worth much, but eventually, once they get political ambitions and things, then they want stuff. And so, among the things that it was claimed that they wanted very badly and that white people were not giving them enough of was housing. But actually, there was a whole boom in attempts to do housing for blacks. And I'll tell you more of that at the end of this. Instead, let us focus on these photos. And I'll show you what this old guy got up to. So what you see here are the molds that he'd made. These were the molds for his concrete. And you can see he can create a whole bunch of big concrete molds, and these are going to be used, these precast concrete slabs. These are big slabs, they are heavy slabs, and you can build a house out of them. So here is an example of some slabs that he'd made that were just lying there, and in this case, they even did a bit of artwork on the slabs. These slabs are big. They're about 6 feet. They're at least 6 feet in height, maybe a bit bigger, because they are so big that you can fit a door frame inside that slab. So here you can see two slabs, and if you look at these two slabs, you'll see that there's like a metal thing that hooks in as well. I seem to recall he explained to me how simple it is to hook these things in so that they're at a certain distance. So there you have two slabs that then form a wall. And it's actually a big, thick wall, actually. And here were some that he'd put up and he'd been experimenting. That's like a corner that he's got there. And here you can see him standing next to it. And you can see from his hands, you can see how wide and how thick those slabs are. You're talking something really strong. Now, I've been to the United States and Canada, and lots of whites there, live in wooden houses. You live in wooden houses even when there's snow, even when it's extremely cold, even when you've got bad weather. Now, take a look at these concrete slabs here. Look at how thick these things are. These things are many, many, many times thicker and stronger than any of your wooden houses in North America that you're paying so much money for. This old guy standing here, this guy came up with a really cheap solution, and yet this system would have been easily affordable by blacks. So this will give you an idea of how big and strong these slabs are. And that's just one slab right in front of him. These things are big and they are heavy. And here you see a couple of slabs joined together to form a wall. So these are things that he's made, and off you go. And here are some more that he put together, and there seems to be some tin there. But this is all part and parcel of things that he was playing with. Now, if you look over here, if you look here, you'll see there is a door frame and a door. So that'll give you an idea of how big these things are. So that is also why you can build so quickly. You just grab these things, you chuck them on top of each other, you join them up quickly, and you got a strong house. Now you see this little building in front of you. This was a little building which I think includes a garage, and I think that's a wooden door there. But you see this little building that he built. The actual innards of that building is made up of these concrete slabs of his. This was like his proof of concept building that he built using those slabs. And there you can see it from another angle. And these photos I took with my phone in 2010, so the quality isn't that good. Now, because these slabs are so heavy, you can't lift them up with your hands. So this, I think, is one of his first experiments where he was trying to come up with a type of a tripod. In this case, it's got four legs that he was going to try and haul these things up with. So the big problem now is they're easy to make, they're big, but they're damn heavy. But he's got a solution. So what this old guy did was he took his tractor and he went and he modified his tractor so that it could pick up those heavy slabs. And these are the photos of the modified tractor. So we're looking at the tractor from behind. Here you can see one hectic piece of, I think this is a piece of concrete, eh? I think this piece of concrete is to counterbalance the weight of the thing on the front, eh? So this thing is freaking heavy. So he's modified his tractor and strengthened his tractor, and we'll look at it from other angles. Here is the tractor from another angle. And behind the tractor is also a trailer. And we'll take a look at the trailer as well. But notice here by the front of the tractor, look at this solid piece of steel up here going up. And unfortunately, this is a blurry photo of mine again, but here you can see more of the tractor. You can see the steel that goes up, and this thing up on the top is like a winch. So this thing has got a hook. This steel that goes up here, it also extends out forward. And in this blurry photo, but basically, this thing has got a cable and a steel hook, and he's going to be able to lift up those heavy precast concrete slabs that he's created. This is the front of the tractor. This is where the slab is actually going to be hanging. And if you look here, there you can see the old guy. I can't even remember his name at the moment. But here you can see the front of the tractor. You can see the heavy steel. And I think what you see here in the middle is a very strong, I think this looks like a type of hydraulic lift here as well, from what I can see here. But you can see this is very solid, very heavy stuff. He's been doing a lot of modifications to his tractor. There you can see it more clearly. Yep, and I was right. There you can see two hydraulic arms that can lift up that thing. And he's still got like a winch and a cable as well. This thing can lift up, and I think somewhere near the front is a steel hook. And he hooks onto those heavy concrete slabs. So he's got his tractor ready, he's got everything, he's tested it. He and somebody went and they tried to tell the government to make a proposal, and they submitted proposals. But if you don't have a lot of money and you don't bribe the right people, then it doesn't matter how good your idea is, you're not going to get anything. So here's the old guy, and he's standing behind his trailer at the back of the tractor. And this trailer that goes with the tractor is also like a little mobile, it's like a little mobile workshop that comes with the tractor. And we're going to look inside it. I think this is on the inside of that little mobile workshop. He's got all this electrical equipment that can be run from inside it. There you can see it. There you can see it. There you can see everything is open. There he's got a drill press or something on the left. There's a grinder. I don't know what this thing is. But there you can see the stuff that he's made. Now, his property was quite big. And he had a heck of a long wall that he built around his property, and he built that entire wall with his precast concrete slabs. So here you can see what it looks like. He's got those pillars that he put in between, and he's got one heck of a wall, man. This thing is freaking strong, and it's big. Do you see how long it is? And this is just part of one side. His entire property was surrounded by this thing. And this black gate over here is where you drive in and out. And this is the view from on top of his house. And then the black gate is over there, and there you can see the part of the wall. And the wall disappears there behind the trees. But the wall goes all around his entire property. So that is what this old guy had produced. Let me just go back to some pictures that you can look at while I'm talking. Now, this old guy, he told me all the lovely things about what he'd done, what he'd thought, how easy it was to do, how cheap it was, how quickly you could just churn out houses for blacks, and the government was not interested at all. Nothing. But this isn't the first time that whites have wanted to build houses for blacks. In fact, the story of black housing in South Africa is a massive story, and you've never heard the story, and they always just pretend, oh well, you see the whites, they didn't do anything for the blacks. They didn't try to help them. They did nothing. If you look carefully on that wall, you'll see he's got some designs and things. He did a bunch of stuff with this, but anyway, that's just how that wall looks. Let me carry on with other things that I know. And the other things I know are just from my 40 years that I've lived in South Africa, because it's almost 40 years exactly that I've lived in South Africa. And in that time, whites have tried to do all kinds of things for these ungrateful black ingrates, these undeserving swines. And the things that they haven't tried to do. When I moved to Johannesburg in 1985, round about 1986, round about 1986, thereabouts, 85, 86, 87, while the blacks were busy causing more and more uprisings and trouble, and the ANC, the African National Congress of Nelson Mandela, who are the ruling party of South Africa, they were busy stirring up revolution, killing people and murdering people, and busy pushing communism down everyone's throats. And Jews were helping to guide the process and give them publicity outside South Africa. When they were busy with all these things, there was a time, round about 1986 or so, when I was living in Johannesburg, when suddenly other whites started coming and talking to me. I was meeting whites, and it was just as a normal part of just knowing people that people started showing me that they were up to new business ideas. The whites of South Africa in the 1970s and 1980s were like the whites of America today. They believed in money and they believed in the free market economics, and they believed that money solved all problems, that you didn't really need to worry about politics that much. As long as you've got a business, everything's going to be okay. And they just thought of everything in business terms. What I'll do while I'm talking is I might even go backwards through the slideshow in case you want to see some other things. And what they did was, as time went by, these whites started coming up with the idea that they should build houses for blacks in the townships. This was in the time of apartheid, like I say, round about 1986, 87, and so forth. Whites were coming up and they were forming businesses, and then they got their architects and their pals. And they started designing different styles of houses. And there were lots of these white businesses, each selling its own types of designs of houses for the blacks. And all these designs were made so that it was affordable for blacks with their type of salary that they were earning in those days. And so the houses were a lot cheaper than the houses of the whites, but They were proper houses. I saw the designs. They would have like a little kitchen. They would have a little lounge. They would have a bedroom or two. They'd have a bathroom and a toilet. And they were properly built. They were houses made out of bricks with proper roofs, proper design, etc. And the blacks could look at the different designs. Each design had a different price, and then you could also ask for modifications to the designs. And I can't tell you how many whites I knew who part-time and after hours were starting to get into this line of thing because they thought they were going to make millions and millions of rands out of basically building houses for black people. And this is in the time of apartheid. And whites were out there coming up with these designs, coming up with the financial backing for it, and running around trying to sell houses to blacks. And they did this for a couple of years. And people came and they told me about it and they said, you know, you're welcome to get involved, etc. But I said, no, thanks, I'm not really interested. And I was skeptical, but this was a big thing, and a lot of whites were busy doing this. Then, in the later 1980s, as the violence got even worse, the government had been making reforms. The white government, by the way, had been making reforms since the early 1980s. They'd made reforms to apartheid, they allowed coloureds and Indians to do certain things and to have some representation in parliament. They started easing up all the laws and things to allow the non-whites to now have more power and more options and things because the whole world and the Jews and the communists were telling them they're doing it all wrong. But anyway, it was during this time, as things got worse, that even the big corporates, even the big Jew-controlled corporates, the banks, all the banks, and all the big insurance companies, all the big corporate money, like that kind of bank that I worked for, all those big corporate organizations run by Jews and liberals, those things came and they gathered together and they put together a plan for billions and billions of rands of finance to help blacks get houses by the million. So not only had you had small white business pushing this, now you had the corporates, all the big, super rich, big money of South Africa were now getting ready to build houses and because that was one of the complaints, was that, you know, blacks are saying the ANC lying scum, they're busy claiming that, you know, the blacks are not getting a chance, they're always hard done by, nobody gives them a break. And so here were all these whites, even the corporates, even the liberals, even the super rich, even the Jews, everybody was diving in to allow blacks to purchase houses that were good quality, that were affordable, and they could get interest rates and loans that were very affordable. And they went on this massive campaign in the time of the late 1980s. And guess what? Here is one of the dirty, dark secrets of South Africa, is that the blacks, the current government of South Africa, the current ruling party of South Africa, the ANC, when all the whites, the liberals, everybody was diving in with all these big business and small business plans for blacks to own houses, you know what the ANC did? The ANC boycotted this thing. The ANC got its operatives to set houses on fire, to attack people, to go and to threaten blacks who've taken out loans, to threaten them and to tell them that if they carry on paying those loans. They're going to get killed, etc. And they destroyed, they sabotaged all the efforts of the whites. They totally destroyed the most massive effort to build houses for blacks by the tens of millions. And it all died a death. The ANC sorted. The very people who rule this country now, that same ruling party of Nelson Mandela, they saw to it that all these houses and all these things were destroyed and damaged, and monthly loan payments weren't coming in, so that this whole thing would collapse. And then when it collapses, then they say, then they go back and they carry on with their lying scum narrative, and they say, oh, well, you see, look at our people. They need houses. They need houses. In fact, there are two points that I want to make. The one point is that in the mid-80s, there was a computer guy that I worked with, Graham, and Graham decided to leave South Africa. There were quite a few whites already in 1986, 1987, who were starting to pack their bags and leave. And many of them went to Australia back then. And this one guy that I worked with, Graham, he was a very knowledgeable English guy. And Graham decided to leave the country. But he'd been building up his own little computer consultancy business. And he handed over his customers to me. And I was very grateful. So it started giving me a chance to do some consultancy and to have my own customers. So I inherited a couple of customers from him, and I still got one or two or three customers from other sources. And I was happy as hell. For 7 years, I worked for myself, and I was as happy as a camper, I tell you. And I had these small and almost medium-sized businesses, and I was their computer consultant, and I wrote their software, and I set up their systems for them, and I was working from home, and I was enjoying it. And one of those customers that I had was a company called Fox Lake. Fox, as in a fox that hunts in the woods. Fox Lake. And Fox Lake was a smallish company, but it had hooks into banking and finance. And all that Fox Lake did was Fox Lake was seeing to it that blacks could get loans, and its only form of business was to finance loans for blacks so that they could get houses. And Fox Lake would go and it would take part in development in different suburbs and townships, and they'd build hundreds of houses at a time and so forth. And that is how it ran for years. And I dealt with a lady who was handling the system. And eventually Fox Lake also shut its doors. Eventually that business died. And I asked, you know, what's happening? You know, why are things going wrong? No, the blacks aren't paying their loans and this and that. And that is all part and parcel of how this whole thing imploded back then. But you won't hear any liberal or Jew or communist or black talking about it. None of them. They'll never tell you the many massive efforts made by the whites under apartheid to build millions and millions of houses using free market economics, giving affordable housing to blacks using the capitalist system. And the communists went and sabotaged and destroyed the system so that it could not work. That is what happened in those days. All an untold story. But if you go and you dig in old newspapers and things, you'll find this stuff was on the front pages of newspapers, big, big things. People were doing huge things. And another thing that also happened is that when the country finally was heading towards black rule, and there may be people who'll be able to find videos of this, there were times when the white government, which is now basically weakening out and becoming liberal thanks to Jewish and American influence. Jews and Americans and the CIA came and they all pushed everybody towards the liberal side. There were debates that took place on TV, and somebody somewhere must be able to find some of these debates. And in these debates, so now capitalism has flopped. Communism has sabotaged every effort by whites, by private whites, by the government, by everybody. It's all been sabotaged, all been fucked up. And then what happens is now you're sitting in politics and there's sitting the fucking ANC, the same fucking ANC that rules the country to this day. And there's the ANC saying, well, you see, our people need houses. And we're going to build millions of houses, you know, in a year. And then you'll find that these white government guys are saying, no, you can't build even a million houses in 1 year in South Africa. We don't have the resources and the stuff for that. But yes, you can build a million houses, but it's going to take you about 5 years. No, says the ANC, you are keeping the black people down. We can build millions of houses in a single year. Talking all kinds of shit, okay? This is the nature of these debates in those times. Those times of the 1990s, I hope people can get more film footage. There's a lot of this stuff. You'll find all kinds of very interesting debates and statements that were made in the 1990s as they were handing over power. ANC says, no, you lying whites, you're just trying to keep the blacks down. You know, we're going to build millions. So whites say, no, it's not possible. Anyway, election comes, ANC takes over. And so after a year, you know, the question is, okay, where are all these millions of houses? No, we've built some houses. We think we've built a million. We're not quite sure, but, you know, we're looking at it and so on. And you actually find that if you look at the statistics, you'll find that the whites had said up front, it'll take you like 5 years to build a million houses for the people. And remember now, this is now starting after 1995, whereas if you go back and the things that I'm telling you about 1986, when the whites had already started. So if the whites had been allowed to start work in the 1980s, the problem would already have been solved by 1995, but the black scum communists, they had sabotaged the whole process and fucked it all up. So that 10 years later, the same problem is still there and the problem is worse. Okay, this is the nature of politics with these fucking pieces of shit. Okay, so anyway, these blacks, at the end of the day, what it boiled down to was it took them about 4 or 5 years to build their million houses. Which, if you'd looked at what the whites had said before, the white government had said on day one, it's going to take you like about 5 years. No, you're keeping us down. 5 years later, what do you see? You see the white man has been proven right yet again. The white man told the truth up front. The ANC was lying through all those years. You'll also find that in the intervening period, that not only had they taken almost 5 years to build the houses, they'd built many substandard houses, completely below standards, houses that when it rained, the house would fall apart. All these kinds of bad quality things that the whites would have not had if they'd been left alone in the first place. You even found that blacks would be given houses by the government. They'd get a house. It was called an RDP house. And it stood for something like, it was like a redistribution something. redistribution plan. There's a bit more to it, but I can't remember the full name. But these were known as RDP houses. So the government then gives certain blacks houses, the houses that they claim they've always wanted. And the blacks go and they sell that house immediately and they take the cash and they go and they waste the cash. Oh man, the scams and things that came out of black housing. Once the blacks did housing, houses that were substandard, houses that fell apart, houses that, oh yes, and it's supposed to be like one black family gets a house, but then you find that multiple people got houses and they were selling the houses. Oh God, it was other scams and things that carried on like that for years, the RDP houses. Meanwhile, and that carried on well into the year 2000, etc. So by then you're looking at about like 15 years and more from the time when whites had originally started and could have solved the problem much earlier. And by then there would have been millions of houses, maybe even tens of millions of houses, if they'd left the whites to do the thing, if they'd cooperated with the whites. Instead, they sabotaged everything, fucked it up, took it over, still scammed money, cocked it up, and so on. That's just one example of how things really work in Africa. And that is the whole untold story of housing in Africa, in South Africa. But don't worry, all across Africa, whites did all kinds of things for these blacks. Whites made it possible for them to live. One of the greatest unappreciated stories of whites is, for example, medical care for blacks. Whites have saved the lives of hundreds of millions of blacks who would otherwise have died and never lived a decent day in their lives. Whites have saved the lives of hundreds of millions of unappreciating ingrates with white science, white surgeons, white technology. For example, the biggest hospital in the entire world, the biggest hospital in the entire world is known as Baragwanath Hospital. Baragwanath Hospital was built in South Africa under apartheid. It's the biggest hospital in the world, and it only serviced black people, only for black people. And surgeons and specialists used to come from Europe to come and operate in Baragwanath Hospital because the kinds of injuries that the blacks were doing to each other, getting drunk, stabbing each other, banging each other up, etc. They got such the white surgeons in Europe didn't get to see this kind of heavy kind of injury that these blacks were doing to each other in their drunken state, or the one's been sleeping with the other one's girlfriend and someone's been fucking someone's wife. And so they come to Baragwanath to actually have experience and to practice because they don't see those things. They don't see those things in Europe at all. So they used to do that, and I'm sure they probably still do it. So these are just many, many offshoots that come from the whites of South Africa and whites in general. These blacks are worthless. We've tried everything with them. Even things like self-rule. Even the Jew-loving Freemason Cecil John Rhodes, even he experimented with black self-rule more than 100 years ago. It's possibly even 120 years ago that he experimented with it when he was the premier of the Cape here in South Africa. Whites have tried everything with blacks. There's not a thing we haven't tried. You just get told, no, the whites, they just came, they just stole everything from the blacks and just enriched themselves, took the best soil for themselves. That's also bullshit, total bullshit. I must find other photos. I've got tons of photos I can show you. And you'll see sides and aspects of Africa that nobody's ever told you. Things you've never heard of before, man. The whites have done everything they can. We've done every kind of experiment with these blacks under God's sun, I tell you. There's not a thing we haven't tried, not a system we haven't thought up, not a method we haven't tried to think up to improve their stupid lives, get more value out of them, and move forward with them. You cannot work with these people. These people and that ANC government that you've got now, they are amongst the biggest racial troublemakers. Their entire policy was to not cooperate with the whites. They were Jew-driven, communist-driven. Their whole goal was to fuck up anything the whites were doing, to fuck it up, to lie about whites, to misrepresent race relations, to misrepresent all the different things that whites were doing. That is what they did, and that is how it happened. And there's many more things that can be said. Also, lots and lots of white Christians have moved into Africa over the centuries, actually. They've spent their time teaching the blacks how to read and write. They've helped them medically. They've helped them in all sorts of ways. They themselves have been raped, had their throats slit, killed, murdered, tortured. Very, very stupid thing. This Christian missionary stuff, big load of bullshit. You're just basically strengthening your enemy, strengthening people who are actually an alien race, and they are your enemy, and they're going to be your competitors, and they're going to work for your destruction. But that is basically a little story I just wanted to show you. And this is the story of Africa. This is the story of Africa. Whites all over the show in Africa were doing things like this. Farmers were figuring out how to plant crops that had never been planted in Africa before. Whites went and bred animals. Whites actually created breeds of animals, including cattle. Breeds of animals, modified plants, and did all sorts of science and agricultural experiments in order to grow food and create animals that were hardier and tougher and could survive in Africa. Whites did this all over Africa in setups like this, where you got a white farmer and his family, and he starts coming up with ideas, and he learns about this, and he uses his skills at that. And so it went on and on and on. It's been done thousands, tens of thousands of times all across Africa. It's been done by the Boers, it's been done by the English, it's been done by the Portuguese, it's been done by the French, by the Germans, by the Belgians, you name it, they've done it, man. There's not a thing that hasn't been done in Africa. And they will tell you, no, the whites, they just came to steal. No, the whites are the only ones who built Africa. The whites are the only ones who had any success in Africa. And my prediction is that even the Chinese, from what I've seen, the Chinese have flopped in Africa many times. Don't expect the Chinese or the Indians or anyone else to have any greater success. My prediction is that 100 and 200 and 300 years from now, when people look back on the history of Africa, they will turn around and they will say, the age of colonialism was the greatest success in Africa. And the only people who created that success were white people from Europe. And I assure you, the American way of working with blacks is totally wrong. Totally wrong. The European way, the way the British and the other whites from the European continent did it. It is the only way that works. It's the only thing that works. But you've never heard even a tenth of those stories. So that's it for today. And I thought I'd just show you these pictures, which I thought I'd lost, of this old white guy and the things that he tried to create. And this was round about 2010. He'd done this in like the prior 10 years. Him and his little tractor and his workshop. And there he goes with his business partners, and they try to get the government to look at this stuff, and the government just wipes their asses on it. Because if there isn't money in it, if there aren't big bribes in it for the black government, then they aren't interested in it either. And rest assured, they do not do things with efficiency in mind. Efficiency is a white man's skill. The white man knows how to get the maximum done with the least amount of effort. And whites have done this over and over and over, not just dozens of times, hundreds of times. Whites are capable of it. It's totally unappreciated, the skills of whites in Africa. And whites have built up all the places that they've gone to. Created things that were never there before for worthless people who can barely feed themselves. The whites came and made agriculture a success until the blacks rebelled against agriculture, and the communists and Jews told them to kill farmers. So now agriculture's fucked up. They fucked up agriculture like they fucked up the housing project, and they've done the same to mines. But in the case of mines, the mines have got lots of money and they can automate a lot. So they haven't been able to totally fuck up the mines because white technology has been able to outstrip them over there. But many, many, many things have been completely fucked up. The blacks have been spiteful. And this government, the current government of South Africa, the ANC, they are the biggest racial troublemakers that you can imagine. Liars and thieves, and they have gone to work and destroy what whites did. And then afterwards, they lie about it. And then they say, oh, the whites did this and the whites did that. Meanwhile, they were behind the stuff. They were busy murdering and killing and intimidating and destroying and burning and fucking up everything they could. That is the untold story. A small portion of the untold story of the whites of South Africa, but it's been played out in other parts of Africa as well. Total disasters. Worst disaster was the Jewish communist idea of creating black politics. A big fuck up. But now I reckon we've reached the point where there's nothing more that can be done. We've experimented with everything. There's nothing more to experiment with. We've done it all. We've tried it all. We can show you. We've done everything that you can possibly do. Every peaceful angle has been explored. Every concept in politics and business has been explored to death. And there's nothing more. There's nothing more to do. All that's left is to fight each other and fight for the territory that we live in. That's all that's left. Everything else has been done to death. There's nothing more to do. And this thing has been only about power. Who's in charge? And it doesn't even matter what the system is. Politics, at the end of the day, doesn't even matter about whether it's communist versus capitalist. When I was young, I used to think, ah, it's communist versus capitalist. At the end of the day, it doesn't actually matter. What really matters is that either you're in charge of your own politics or you're not. It's that simple. And in their case, the blacks went for power at all costs, over any dead bodies, over any lives, etc. That's how they did it. That's how Jewish communists taught them, liberals assisted them, the super rich funded them, and that is how this thing was done. And at the end of the day, the whites are the ones that have been lied about, conspired against, and they've been taking the beatings. But it is actually the whites of Africa are the untold, unappreciated creators of virtually everything that exists in Africa. And even today, much of the infrastructure that exists in Africa is either that which was created by the whites or built on top of what was created by the whites, what little was built. But it's the whites who created the entire infrastructure of what is now in Africa. And all they get is a whole lot of bad mouthing for things that they didn't even do, crimes they didn't even commit. And the scum who came afterwards did so much worse. But anyway, I thought I'd just show you. When you hear all these stories of the blacks, oh, we don't have houses, and the whites took our money, and we have nothing, and we don't have food, and we don't have medicine, and please give us more loans, and we need more money. There's thousands and tens of thousands of stories just like this guy, untold stories of the efforts of whites in Africa that you just were never told. The New York Times, the Jew-owned New York Times and all that, they didn't tell you any of that stuff. That has been ignored in history. But if you go and you dig hard enough, you'll find that everything I'm telling you is true. So a little bit of the untold story. But I've got tons of stuff hiding all over the show. I'll show you all sorts of things about Africa that you've never heard of before. And you'll see, the white man has been the only creative force this continent has ever known. And you destroy the white man, and this continent is dead. And these blacks, anyway, should be left to die. They really should be left to die, honestly. Just a final note, after I had done this recording, I was actually looking around on the internet and I found that article, which you see on the screen there, I actually put some annotations on the article. And the article was from 2016. It was from March 2016. 22 years! 22 years after the blacks came to power in South Africa. And in this article, it said, no, the ANC has not built 5 million houses since 1994. Because that was the original thing, was build 5 million houses. And the blacks were saying, no, you can't build 1 million a year. You are holding us back. You're slowing us down. The blacks were saying that when the whites said to them, no, you can't build millions of houses like in just a short while. You know, it's going to take you a time. It's going to take you like 5 years or whatever to build 1 million. I can't remember the exact numbers. And here you can see in 2016 this article, and here I put some annotations to say that, you know, there it was. 22 years later, the blacks had only built 3 million houses. And even the 3 million that they'd built, there were lots of problems. There'd been houses that had been so bad that they fell apart. There were all kinds of complaints. Now, if you take 3 million houses in 22 years, then that works out at 136,000 houses a year. So here were these blacks saying, no, you whites, you're keeping us down, you're slowing us down. You know, we can build houses faster than you. And what is the reality? The reality is that over 22 years after chucking huge amounts of government funds into it, these blacks could only build 136,000 houses a year. So after 22 years, they still hadn't got to the 5 million. But if the whites had been left alone back in 1986 to do their thing, I bet you the whites would have built 10 million houses by now, if not more. And you wouldn't have had a fraction of these problems that you see. But this is the nature of the discussion in South Africa and in Africa. It's a discussion that is not even worth having. You cannot have logical discussions with these people because logic and reason and all that is out the window. This thing is a straight fight over power. End of story. There's nothing more to it than that. It's a straight fight over power. And I think the quote from Bismarck, the politician who united Germany and created what is known as modern Germany, Bismarck said, you know, the great questions of our day will be settled with blood and iron. And I want to tell you that when it comes to liberalism, diversity, multiracialism, anti-Semitism, all these different things, the question of the day will be settled with blood and iron. There's no other way to do it. You cannot have a discussion. The discussion is about power, and you never discuss power. Those who have power, they seize it and hold on to it, and they kill anybody who tries to grab the power. And those who want the power need to be able to fight for it. And maybe their fight is successful, maybe their fight is unsuccessful, but that is how it actually works. And all this Jewish bullshit that you can talk things out and you can get to conclusions through negotiation and meetings, that stuff's been tried to death in South Africa. I'm so bored with it, I'm so sick of it. We used to do it in the corporate world, we did it everywhere. You do it everywhere, everywhere. If you want to go and discuss crime, there are monthly crime meetings with the police, and you've got to go deal with the shit that comes from the police. So it goes on. Here in South Africa, we have done talking to death. Talking is a big waste of time. The only talking that you do is with bullets. Bullets and artillery shells and rockets and mortars and tanks. That's how you discuss power. There's no other way to discuss power. Everything else is just bullshit. So I just wanted you to see this screenshot from an article sitting on the internet, and it says, no, the ANC has not built 5 million houses since 1994. Because that was already a lie that they told in 2016. So it's now 2020, and I will bet you that it is no different, that after 26 years, at that rate, after 26 years, they would now be at 3.5 million houses. That's what it would be. 26 years later, 3.5 million houses. And all their nonsense, oh, the whites are keeping us back, you're keeping us down, stopping us from having things. The real issue here is power. The ANC wanted power. They talked any shit they wanted to talk in order to get power, and that's how the whole thing works, and that's pretty much it. But just wanted to show you 22 years later. And approximately, that's what they were saying in the article, it's approximately 3 million houses after 22 years. And the black population in the meantime has exploded through the roof, so these houses cannot keep pace with the black population growth. And the same is true for jobs, the same is true for the economy. But that's a whole other topic. The problem is the blacks expand in terms of their population faster than they can handle themselves, whereas whites are always functioning within their means. That's how it works. So yeah, just to let you know, just more bullshit about colonialism and whites. And if they'd left the whites alone, things would have been sorted out, things would have been done faster, whether it was done by the government, whether it was done by free market capitalism, as we believed it to be, whichever way we did it, it would have been done faster, better, etc. But all these discussions are a total waste of time. You're just wasting your time. It's just a load of bullshit. Any kind of discussion is actually completely a waste of time. And all these people do is they just lie and lie and lie. They're constantly lying and misrepresenting things. They have been taught, they've been well taught how to lie. That's how this thing works. That's diversity in South Africa, the new South Africa, the improved South Africa, the liberal Jewish communist South Africa. That is the end result of it. Total fucking waste of time. What a load of rubbish. What we need is a whites-only state. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.